Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Jimmy Page is on the show tonight. Need I say more? If you're a rock fan, a guitar fan, a Led Zeppelin fan, you'll want to stay with us. If you're not a rock fan or a guitar fan or a music fan at all, then you might have something called musical anhedonia. It's a term we discussed on Soundcheck last week, and it describes people who don't derive any pleasure from listening to music. My guest, Dr. Robert Satori from McGill University, estimated that about 2% of the population might fall into this category. So, we asked if you think you or someone you know might have musical anhedonia, and we actually heard from quite a few of you, including Rachel from Nutley, New Jersey.
My two children have always enjoyed music a great deal, but my nephew, who is adopted, does not share his father's, my brother's, love of music. And my brother used to tell me when my nephew was younger, he's 16 now, and they would play music for him, any kind of music, kids' music, classical music, rock and roll, he would just say, turn off that noise. So I wonder if he might have this condition or approach to music that you mentioned.
We also heard from Anne, who wrote this on soundcheck.org. I was so happy when I first heard about this research. I realized as a teenager that I wasn't experiencing music the way everyone else was, leaving me on the outside of something I didn't understand. Anne goes on to write, I loved Robert Satori's description of musical anhedonics being able to tell when music is supposed to make you sad or happy or whatever, because I often feel composers are trying to manipulate me. I know what the music's trying to make me feel, but it usually isn't working. Well, if you missed our show about musical anhedonia, you can find it at soundcheck.org. And Anne, if you're out there listening, I'd be interested to hear your response to the music of a young singer-songwriter named Benjamin Booker. He'll tackle subject matter ranging from religion to runaways on songs that are grungy and bluesy and also maintain a kind of punk, upbeat energy. Benjamin Booker will play live in our studio later, but first... Guitarist Jimmy Page doesn't need an introduction, but since that's what I get paid the big bucks to do, here goes. Jimmy Page occupies a special place in the rock pantheon. If all he did was play guitar in Led Zeppelin, that would have been enough. But by the time he helped form Zeppelin, he had already been a guitar hero with the Yardbirds. And through his long career, before and after Led Zeppelin, he's played with a who's who of rock royalty. And the proof is in the photos in a new book called simply Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. Jimmy, welcome to Soundcheck.
Well, it's a pleasure, John.
The book is kind of hard to describe. What do you tell people this is?
An indescribable book, really. What the idea of it was to actually present a musical career and a lifetime in music in photographs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an autobiographical book. So basically, this is what it is. It starts off when I'm about 12, and it finishes off when I'm 70 at Berklee College. And so it's just a complete run of photographs of my life all the way through and the various incarnations that I made.
Right. So it seems like you have saved quite a number of items from this long journey. Are you a pack rat? Did you save everything along the way? I mean, we see visas and old photos. And
I was a bit of a visionary, really, because I saved things so that they didn't appear on eBay later. I fortunately had a number of the photographs, a small number of photographs certainly in the from the early stages, the sort of pre-Beatles era, in my own collection. Mm-hmm. And I had photographs of Bron Rahr Cottage, where I went with Robert at one point, Robert Plant. There were a number of photographs that I had of my own, which could augment the overall journey of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do say that you set out to create a photographic autobiography. When you went through now 60, almost 60 years of photographs, were there any surprises, any things that you didn't expect?
Some of the very early shots, as I say, pre-Beatles, back in 1959, 1960, of these bands that were doing their own version of rock and roll. You know, there was a definite movement, if you like, in the south of England. We all know about the Beatles in the north, mm-hmm. but there was a definite north-south divide as far as the music and the content went. So some of these early little bands, I mean, it's quite interesting to see those, and I was really pleased to have those, because what this does in effect, you just see that you get a feel for the ambience of the time.
Anything where you said, "Oh, I forgot I did that"?
Well, something that was rather interesting with the very early photographs was that I saw some sort of, this is really odd, but I'm about 15 and I'm playing at a cinema on a rock and roll tour with a band called Neil Christian and the Crusaders. And I'm down on one knee, and the weird thing is it's exactly the same body language as photographs in 1977.
Right.
On a Led Zeppelin tour. And I mean, those sort of things were fascinating to find, more than just, you know, a photograph that might pop out. I mean, I chose everything very carefully to chart this voyage all the way through, from being a choir boy all the way through to Berkeley.
Right. Or Berkeley, as we say here in the States.
Berkeley, I'm very sorry about that.
Where you got an honorary degree.
Yeah.
And you also got, there's also a photo of you getting an OBE from the Queen.
That's correct.
Now,
yeah.
My knowledge of the different levels of order and commander and all that stuff is a little fuzzy. Are you
okay
now? Are you Sir Jimmy Page?
No. It's the Order of the British Empire.
Right.
So it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, you bet.
I just wondered if I had to now, you know, address you as Sir
Absolutely
Jimmy.
Absolutely not.
So are you a photographer yourself? I mean, are you a visually inclined person despite a lifetime in music?
Well, there are photographs in there that I took when I was on vacation, etc. There's also a selfie in 1970, which is rather interesting.
Did you invent the selfie?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. But it's interesting to have a selfie in there. And it's taken at the house, which was in my home, which I lived at during the time of the Yardbirds. And I'm actually taking a selfie, and it's more or less a sort of goodbye shot of this house. But this is the house where Led Zeppelin get routined, where we go in there. I bring them to the house after this initial rehearsal we have. And we rehearse the whole of the album material and the set that we're going to go out to play in Scandinavia before going in to record. So that there's that and the same house was where we rehearsed Whole Lot of Love, What Is What Should Never Be. So, you know, it's quite a magical place, really.
And if you say to me tomorrow, oh, what fun it what's to stop us, pretty baby? But what is and what should never be? I catch the wind, see it spin, sail away, leave the day way up high in the sky. And all that the wind won't blow, really should go, only got the show. Thank you.
just a little bit of What Is and What Should Never Be, one of the early Led Zeppelin songs that, as Jimmy Page was just telling us, they sort of worked out in this house that appears in one of the photos in the book, which is simply called Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. Mm. We see not only photos of you, but photos of your many guitars.
Yes.
Over the years.
Yes.
How many do you have now?
I don't know. I'm not sure, because a figure comes to mind, but that includes lots of different instruments as well.
And what figure would that be?
Just
toss it out.
Well, all I can say is, apart from the double neck, I can't play them all at the same time.
So. There is the famous double neck with the 12 string and the 6 string. There's even a triple neck, which you played for a while. The third string was kind of a octave guitar mandolin thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That was as a result. You see, Stairway dictated, once Stairway was recorded, it more or less dictated that it had to be played live. I wanted to play it live, this piece of music that we had. And it involved an acoustic guitar, an electric 6-string solo, and then 12-string guitar, electric 12-string overdubs. And I needed a guitar where I could do all of this at once. And that's how the double neck came into play. Yeah. I mean, it was dictated really by the fact that Stairway existed.
Dear lady, can you hear the wind blow? And it's you alone. Your stairway lies on the whispering
a little bit of Stairway to Heaven featuring that double neck guitar. It had the 12 string on one neck, a 6 string on the other, and many pictures of this in the book Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. And for all that there's very little verbiage in this book, it is mostly a photographic autobiography.
Yeah.
There are a couple of references to technology, early laser technology in Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You talk about bringing a fuzz box to one of your early sessions
when you were
a session musician.
That's right.
So it seems like you've always kind of had an ear to the ground.
Yes. Well, the fuzz box, or it's like an overdrive unit, was really revolutionary at that time. I worked with somebody on it, somebody from the Admiralty in England. He was in the electronic department, and he was very. He worked in the area where they were doing top secret stuff.
Wow.
But he'd approached me and said, is there any way that we could combine electronics with music? And I took him to my house and I played him some music with like overdriven guitar, and he came up with this thing, and I got the first one because I was working with him. And when I took it into, because I was a studio musician, when I took it in there, everybody just freaked. They couldn't believe the sound of it. And I made sure that Jeff Beck got the second one. And then, of course, everybody got them after that, right across, not just in studios, but outside. You know?
Yeah. And eventually you would take those on the road. There is a whole kind of series of photographs here in the Led Zeppelin part of the book of the Nebworth Festival. Two weekends that you guys did in Nebworth in 1979. Why was that festival important to you?
Because we hadn't played in England for quite a while. The idea of the festival seemed to be a really good way to sort of supply the demand, because this was always a problem with Led Zeppelin, really. And after having been missing for a while off of the British concert scene, and with a new album coming out as well, it seemed a really, really good idea to do it.
That concert, actually, you write in the book that it concluded with all four of you walking off singing You'll Never Walk Alone.
Well, yes, that was as a response of what was happening from the audience.
Oh.
They were singing that.
Yeah. Okay.
It's actually a Liverpool football team anthem.
Well, yes, I know, and I was wondering how you got Robert, who is a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan, to sing a Liverpool song.
Well, we've all got our cross to bear. But, you know, it was really moving at the end.
Yeah.
You know, the feeling from the audience, what they were, you know, the love that they were sending to us when they started singing that at the end. Yeah, it was a sort of teary moment, to be honest.
We're speaking with Jimmy Page. The book is an autobiography in photographs. It's called Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. And from that Nebworth concert in 1979, here's a version, a little bit of Whole Lotta Love. Whole Lotta Love from the 1979 Led Zeppelin concert at the Nebworth Festival, two weekends of Led Zeppelin, and the Fuzzbox in full throttle there. Jimmy Page with me here on Soundcheck. You mentioned you'll Never Walk Alone being kind of an anthem for Liverpool supporters, the soccer club. The photo that we get of you, the closest that you get to sport in the book, is a photo of you in full cricket regalia.
Yes.
Except instead of wielding a bat, you're wielding a guitar.
Yes.
What the hell were you doing there?
Well, first of all, I don't expect maybe 2% of the listeners might know what cricket is. They might think Jiminy Cricket or something like that, but it is actually a sport.
Yes, we think of it as like the longer, more boring version of baseball.
I see. Yeah, well, it's quite an eccentric sport, isn't it? So what the story is with that was that a music magazine in England called Melody Maker had asked if I would if they could have a competition prize of a guitar, and I said yeah, sure enough, okay, and they wanted a photograph, so I thought I'd use it as a cricket bat and just sort of dress up just for a prank really, but that actual guitar was really a competition prize. I never got to find out who got it. My guess is probably the editor, because it was one of my own guitars.
Or something like that.
Yes, right. But you know, it was just a bit of fun. But my contribution to sport, yeah, well, that was about it, really.
So it was borrowed cricket gear. It wasn't really
absolutely. Yours. Got that one right, yeah.
You do talk in the book about It Might Get Loud. The documentary film done with you, The Edge, and Jack White.
Yeah, sure.
And when we continue in a moment, I need to just take a quick break here. I want to ask you about that project. So we'll do that shortly. My guest is Jimmy Page. And later we've got a fiery blues punk set coming your way from Benjamin Booker. So stay with us. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're speaking today with Jimmy Page, whose new book is a photographic journey through a life in music. It's called simply Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. And we were talking a moment ago about the documentary It Might Get Loud, which there are photos of in the book. This was you, The Edge from U2, and Jack White. What did that project mean to you, to have two generations of younger guitarists who sort of idolize you and to be working with them?
Yeah, it was interesting, I've got to say, really, really interesting.
Did you feel like you were meeting your musical godchildren in a way?
No, I didn't think of it like that at all. Mm. And Jack White, well, you know, I've just got so much respect for Jack White. Anyway, I thought his parts were marvellous, and it's interesting how far he's come in so many areas, even from that time. Seven Nation Army, you obviously worked out... Did you have the guitar part, and then you did the lyrics to it, right?
Well, I played it... I remember we were at a sound check in Australia, and I played it. And then I kind of thought... For a second, I left it there. I kind of thought, oh, maybe one day if I ever get, you know... have to do like a James Bond theme song or something, or some spy movie. Yeah. Like, oh, maybe I'll use that. But it did. It just kind of came out when we went to Hackney and recorded. But
it really shows how it goes.
Yeah, I'll get. Well, first of all, it's open A tuning, but it's just started the.
It's a great sound.
Yeah, fabulous.
Then a G. That'll be $5.
A little musical moment from the documentary It Might Get Loud, starring my guest Jimmy Page, U2's The Edge, and, of course, their Jack White. So now, you knew his work even before he went solo. This is while he was still with the White Stripes. So do you, I mean, are you still listening to, who are you listening to these days? Who's out there that, that's on your radar?
My tastes are really, really eclectic right across the board, and they were before I was a session musician even, and they still are now. So one of the bands that I most recently heard, I think people know that I've mentioned this before, is a band called Royal Blood. But what was I listening to before I left my house to come over here? It was Dimmy Mintaba.
Oh, the Mauritanian singer.
Absolutely, yeah.
She's terrific.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I've got a CD of that.
Well, now that...
You don't necessarily get vinyl of Dimmy Mintaba.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, it's just beautiful.
A little bit of music from the late great Mauritanian singer Dimmy Mintaba, who is a favorite of my guest, Jimmy Page. And now that, Jimmy, brings us to another section of the book. And again, the book is called Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. You and Robert Plant, the Page Plant Project.
Yeah.
Where, you know, these are some of the most exotic photos in the book. You know, you working with like the Andalusian Orchestra in Morocco and stuff like that. What was that experience like? I mean, by this point, you'd seen and done it all, but was this different?
What of the pairing together?
Yeah.
It started with Robert had some tape loops. I don't know for how long, but he said, do you want to sort of pair up to see whether I can do anything on these loops? Mm-hmm. And I do. It's almost immediate. And so we get together in an afternoon, and we got two or three things straight away. And one of the numbers, The Truth Explodes, is recorded in Morocco. The other loop song that's on there is called Wonderful One. But the thing that was going to be really interesting and challenging was to go to Morocco and have this loop playing, and I'd be playing the guitar over it. Robert would be singing in the square, a medieval square in Marrakesh, and that was really amazing.
Yeah.
I'd been to Morocco on many occasions, and I'd gone to this square, and I'd seen sort of musicians busking. Well, anyway, we also got together with some Ganawas, and
the Ganawa are the traditional healing musicians of Morocco.
They absolutely are, and it was a real privilege to be playing with people of this sort of quality and caliber. And there were some numbers wrote there, like "City Don't Cry," etc. And we made some recordings outside of Marrakesh, in a sort of courtyard, and then we also did some recordings in this square, in this medieval square at night. That was a wonderful experience. It was good, and it was lovely to be working with those musicians.
They're extraordinary photographs.
Yeah, they are nice, aren't they?
Yeah. In the book, Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page, and he, of course, is my guest here on Soundcheck. I wanted to play a little bit of Four Sticks, the old Zeppelin song from this Page Plant session, because it's really fascinating how this familiar Zeppelin tune accommodates the sounds of these exotic strings.
Baby, baby, how do you feel? If the rivers run dry, baby, how do you feel? Oh,
bit of Four Sticks from the Page and Plant sessions, and Jimmy Page here with me on Soundcheck.
Yeah. Well, curiously enough, in 1972, I had a really ambitious idea that the idea that I had was to go in to Bombay into the recording studio with the equivalent of, the Bollywood musicians.
Oh, those orchestras
who would
are
never
amazing.
Have
yeah.
heard any Led Zeppelin. This is I knew this was going to be the case because he's an older gentleman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard Led Zeppelin. And to go in there and translate the music to them through an interpreter and come out of there with some music. Now, one of the things that was done was Four Sticks.
Hmm.
And in actual fact, it became Four Hands because there was one gentleman playing tabla drum, another playing madringam, so they were sort of four skins, and then also violinists and shenhai player, etc., etc., sarangi, and we got. I managed to get two numbers out of this. There was that, and then also Friends. We did a version of Friends. Robert sang on the version of Friends,
mm-hmm.
but I wanted to see whether it was possible to work with them from basically nothing, and I did. We never actually got to do the Led Zeppelin tour that stopped off in these places because the infrastructure just was not going to be there for maybe another 10 years.
Yeah. So what happened to those tapes?
They're in my vault. Yeah.
All right. So what else is in the Jimmy Page basement tapes vault?
Yeah, some good stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Will we hear any of it at some point?
It goes right across the board, really. It's not just Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. Mm. Well, as the book details, you know, your career has been, I mean, there's a long post-Zeppelin, which includes Page and Plant, and It Might Get Loud. It also includes the closing ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics.
Yeah.
Where you did a whole lot of love with Leona Lewis.
Yeah.
David Beckham's kicking a ball into the crowd. It's a handoff from Beijing to London.
Yeah.
And you say that was a high point for you.
Oh, absolutely it was a high point. Now, Leona Lewis was just in the last stages of the X Factor, and which she won, hands down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been following her on that, believe it or not, with my family, you know.
Yeah.
I had young kids and... And they all got Leona Lewis, and I thought this is going to be really wonderful because I had so much respect for this lady. She's really plucky because she went from like the X Factor and just the audience is there. This is the first time that she's going out solo to do this place with an audience of millions and a huge stadium, 70,000, whatever it was, 80,000, I don't know. In a really good way, it was very sultry, her approach to it.
And so was your guitar solo that night the single most listened to guitar solo in human history?
That's what they actually said at the time. They said it was going to go in the Guinness Book of Records, but... Well, he didn't. I don't think. But it was, you know what, it was a really challenging thing, and it was fun. And the pairing with her, she was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, of course, it was a high point.
Led Zeppelin's classic Whole Lot of Love with Leona Lewis and my guest Jimmy Page. Big moment, big guitar solo. The photos documenting the event appear near the end of the book Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page, a kind of photographic autobiography. It opens with the phrase, "It might get loud," and it closes with the phrase, "It might get louder."
Yeah.
How's your
it's
hearing?
A bit cheeky, isn't
How's
it?
How's your hearing these days?
Oh, my hearing's really good.
How have you managed that?
Two things which really surprised me that they're still really working on a high ratio is my memory and also my hearing. So I'm really lucky to... I mean, it could be a real handicap if you can't hear properly.
Yeah. So you're ready to go out there and crank the amps to 11 again?
Well, I won't be using in-ear monitors, that's for sure. I never never have.
Okay.
You know? So even on that Beijing thing, I had like monitors, the old style of doing things. And, I'm willing to go out there. But I've been playing acoustic as much as electric.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just go out there to showcase what I do. And what I'm sort of known for, what I do well, but I'm also known for doing things that other people don't do, and having surprises, you know, like this book, something which is, you know, nobody else has done something like that, and even those the Led Zeppelin releases that are currently coming out, to have a companion disc to reflect the original recordings of the studio albums. Mm. No one's done that. They might throw a few bonus tracks in, but this isn't like that. I don't think that way.
Okay. I want to hear those Bombay tracks at some point down the road.
You never know.
Sounds pretty amazing. Jimmy Page has been my guest here in the Soundcheck studio. The photographic autobiography, simply called Jimmy Page, is out now. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, John, thanks very much. Real pleasure.
Next, the talented singer, songwriter, and guitarist Benjamin Booker joins us in the Soundcheck studio. You won't want to miss his set next on Soundcheck.
I'm Joe from Bushwick. The first album I bought with my own money was Pink Floyd, The Wall. I listen to it like the whole album at least once a year just to get back to my grooves. Oh, it's just a brick in the wall.
You're just a break in the wall. We don't need no hatred.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 25-year-old Benjamin Booker has the kind of story that might inspire envy in any up-and-coming rocker. After college, he began writing some blues-infused punk songs. He gigged around New Orleans for a while, picked up a record deal, and within months was opening for Jack White and then playing for millions on The Late Show with David Letterman. When you listen to his music, you might see why. Benjamin Booker and his band join us in the Soundcheck studio to play some songs off his self-titled debut record. This first one is called Violent Shiver. Benjamin Booker with his song Violent Shiver live on Soundcheck. Ben singing and playing the guitar. Max Norton behind our drum kit. Alex Spoto playing the bass. The debut album is called simply Benjamin Booker. Ben, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. So, you know, you open your mouth and you start singing and suddenly you sound like you've been doing this for decades.
2 years. Yeah.
2 years this has been. So it's been like this whirlwind thing.
Mm-hmm.
How did you learn? Is that just your natural voice? Does it just have that kind of, you know,
yeah,
you old just, sound?
Just not taking care of myself for years. That's what you sound like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this has all happened pretty fast. It was like just a year ago probably that you plugged in and started playing electric, right?
Yeah, about a year ago I started playing with Max, yeah.
And was it actually hooking up with Max, you know, finding a drummer to play with that sort of propelled you?
I mean, I had started playing with a drummer in New Orleans, but he was with another band. And then, started playing with Max, and then we started playing more and more shows. I was playing acoustic before, but I didn't really enjoy it, like, a whole time. Yeah.
So were you playing, like any of these songs in acoustic versions?
Yeah, all the songs. I mean, these are the only songs I have. Yeah, I was playing all these songs.
Okay. And these songs all come from a certain kind of moment in time in your life, right? Post-college, mm-hmm. kind of lost and, as you say, not taking care of yourself.
Yeah, the worst times, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, between like maybe 20 and 22.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Had you written songs before that?
No, I had never written any songs before that, no.
So it wasn't until you kind of hit some tough times that the music started happening. I mean, that's the blues, isn't it? Isn't that the story of the blues?
I suppose so. I guess that's how it works.
Did you grow up with that sound?
With that kind of stuff? Towards the end of like high school, like late teens, I started listening to like a lot of blues stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. If you're like a angsty teenager, I mean, the blues is great. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you grew up in Florida. There's yep. There's a notable punk scene there as well.
Oh, yeah. It was the best punk scene. Yeah. It was just a lot of kids, like, saving up their allowances and putting out records. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. But were you a part of that scene? Sounds like you weren't.
No. I mean, I went to the shows, but I didn't play anything. Yeah, no. I was too scared to play in front of people. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, you know, opening for Jack White, playing on the Letterman show, you know, what was it that got you over the hump and made it possible for you to do that?
Well, I mean, I guess the music, the music was like, I guess, taking off a little bit, and like I had to start playing. Like I was already talking to labels and like lying and saying that I'd played shows before. And I had to start playing, so I did it. I like forced myself to do it, yeah.
Uh-huh. So now, you know, as you said, these are all songs from this kind of darker time of your life. What's it like to now be reliving that every night with, you know, by playing these
it
songs?
It is the worst. No, I mean, the shows are fun, but when we play the songs now, I'm like really focused on like the audience and like playing the music. But I mean, occasionally, yeah, you're thinking about the words and stuff, and like, yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I've sang these songs in front of the people that they're about, and like, that's no fun. But, yeah.
So you mean, like, there were songs about addiction and depression and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really rough. Yeah, it's not a lot of fun to sing that stuff over and over again.
So have you started, I mean, have you written any songs in the past year, or has it just been too busy going from one thing to another?
It's been really busy, yeah. I mean, I'm not very good at writing on the road. Like, sitting in a car with these guys is, like, it's tough to write songs. But, I mean, like, I'm, like, putting stuff together slowly, you know. Like, during soundcheck, we'll, like, jam a little bit, or, like, mm-hmm. if I'm walking down the street, I'll maybe, like, be the weirdo recording melodies on my phone and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I haven't really... I mean, the album was recorded last December. Like, it's all been very quickly. I'm still, like, trying to get used to these songs, yeah.
I'm just wondering what the next batch of songs, which are not coming out of the same place, presumably, or, you know, whether that will be...
It'll be very different than this last album. Very different.
So that much you can tell already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I'm in a better place.
That makes it sound like you're dead. Benjamin Booker, he's in a better place. So the album is out. It came out in August, and it's simply called Benjamin Booker. The song Happy Homes, one could view that as an ironic title. How do you view it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. Yeah, I guess it's an ironic title. I mean, I could talk about what the song's about, but last time I did that, it really bummed people out. So, Maybe we shouldn't do
Why
that.
Why don't you just play it, then?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Give me a second. One second.
Benjamin Booker will strap on the old Epiphone again. Once again, Max Norton behind the drum kit and Alex Spoto playing the bass. And a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio of this song called Happy Homes.
Down on her knees, not crying. better rest your head now. We're all in the corner side of the room. But you're born to a happy home. Two dogs and a can of gold. She left home when she was just 16. But was she still the day I saw her?
Song's called Happy Homes, live performance in the Soundcheck studio from Benjamin Booker, the singer and guitarist, with Max Norton on drums and Alex Spoto on bass. You'll find that on the debut album, also called Benjamin Booker, which is out now. And Ben, you chose not to tell us what the song is about. You said last time you did, people got bummed out.
Mm-hmm.
I guess people want to feel that they're being told a story.
Yeah.
But if it's like a true story and there's no emotion, is that what bums people out? The idea that, oh man, that's like, that really happened to someone.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. It really did. I mean, yeah. I mean, it was the song. It was about, I had like passed by this woman who was hit by a car and died on the side of the road.
Was this in New Orleans?
In Florida.
In Florida?
And I don't know. I was just, it was somebody's kid, you know, somebody's daughter. And I was just wondering where she came from. If it was like a happy home, you know, it was a homeless woman. Like, yeah, so I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, but that again has been part of the blues tradition is, you know, stuff ripped from the headlines. You know, the 1927 flood produced like some incredible, like Charlie Patton.
Yeah, absolutely. High water everywhere. There we go.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised you know Charlie. I'm so impressed.
How
right
old
now.
Do you think I am? I'm no, so, I did not know Charlie.
I'm so impressed right now.
Speaking of age, let me quote one of your own lyrics back at you. You start You start the song Spoon Out My Eyeballs with this line, I would listen to the radio if I liked songs produced by 40-year-olds in high-tech studios. Now, 40 is in the rearview mirror.
It's in the rearview mirror.
But here I am on the radio in a high-tech studio. Explain yourself, Mr. Booker.
Yeah, I mean, that song wasn't, I mean, that's not how I feel now. That was, I came from, like, this DIY punk scene, and, like, The rest of the song, like, it goes back and forth between the present, I guess, and the past, like, the young me. When I was, like, growing up, I guess, in that scene, it was very, like, anti-establishment kind of thing, and, like, I don't know, get out of here with these, like, if you're over 25, you shouldn't be playing music kind of thing. But, I mean, like, I don't know. As I got older, I think a lot of people who grew up in that kind of thing, like, realized that, like, there's way more rules and that than, like, if you leave it, and... Yeah, I mean, I've got plenty of 40-year-old friends. Yeah, it's okay.
It's funny how many of the rockers in the 60s who were saying, you know, if you're over 30, you know, well, it's funny how many of them are still out there.
I know, yeah.
Now, when you were in college, you were a journalism major, right?
It's true.
And the story goes you also were responsible for booking bands that would come play on the college?
Yeah, I booked some bands at our school.
Which school?
University of Florida, yeah. I mean, we had... The Walkman, Deer Hunter, Heartless Bastards, a lot of bands, yeah.
And so would you interview those bands when they came to campus?
No. I mean, no, I didn't do that, no. it's too much to, like, run a show and interview people. Yeah, no, I didn't do that.
Okay.
But it was nice, you know? You just get money from schools and they say book whoever you want. So it was just like, yeah, I mean, I love Deer Hunter. And I was like, we have to have this band.
That is pretty cool, actually. So now the song you're going to wrap up with, the song "Have You Seen My Son," these lyrics seem to be from your life. Is this basically to your parents? You singing to your parents?
Yeah, I mean, all of the songs, the first like batch of songs that I've written were songs that I had just written for friends. Like I wasn't planning on making a record or anything. It was just I don't know. I had something to say to friends and family, and I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to, like, talk about stuff. So I just, like, wrote a few songs and, like, handed them out. Yeah.
The song is on the debut album, Benjamin Booker, which is out now. Ben, it's been a lot of fun having you in the band here playing for us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
This song is called "Have You Seen My Son?" live on Soundcheck.
Understand you, or I just learned that you might be. I knew that you were calling the Lord, asking for answers for some relief. Yeah, that you were calling out my name, and crying for a whole week. See, I'm seeing my son is the boss in my world, somewhere I pray for every day, but no, he ain't seen your way. Is he alright now? Is he alright? Trying to find some truth in this world. I know those things that you want to say. I heard that you were calling on the Lord, asking for answers for some relief. I heard that you were calling on my name, and crying for a whole week. You see what I've seen? My son is lost in the world, somewhere I pray for him every day, but now he ain't seen walk with him. Is he alright now? Is he all? Before I rode away from Florida, down out in the New Orleans, I said, God, much love, everyone, even though it's just the least that say that when I'm gone. As a child, all she would do was know that I can never make it right. But it's hard to hear you say I've seen my son is lost in the world. Somewhere I pray for him every day, but now he ain't seen your way. Alright, is he alright now? Is he alright?
That's Benjamin Booker with his song "Have You Seen My Son," performed here in the Soundcheck studio. Visit soundcheck.org to watch video of this session. Tomorrow on the show, James Gavin has written biographies of some of the most acclaimed jazz musicians of the 20th century, including Chet Baker and singer Lena Horne. Now, both of those artists had pretty strange lives, but Gavin actually saves the word strange for his latest book. It's called Is That All There Is? The Strange Life of Peggy Lee. We'll hear about what makes Peggy Lee's life story strange tomorrow. Plus, the L.A. band Noah and the Megafauna return with their mix of gypsy jazz and indie rock on a new album called The Pale Blue Dot. The big band packs into our studio for a live set. Also, you might have heard us talking earlier this week about this. As of next Monday, November 17th, Soundcheck is going all digital. For those of you who listen online or via podcast, which is a pretty big number, not going to be a big deal. But if you're a radio listener, it will be a switch. So instead of listening to us on the air at a specific time, you'll be able to find us 24/7 at soundcheck.org, and we'll bring you all the usual good stuff, daily music news, live music streams, playlists, videos like the Benjamin Booker that we shot today, and all the rest of what you listen to Soundcheck for. So, if you're not already subscribed to our free podcast on iTunes, now's the time to do it. Find us in the iTunes Store and subscribe. And maybe leave a review while you're at it. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter so we can let you know when all this good stuff is available. Marco Benevento's Eagle Rock is our theme song. That does it for today's show. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.